Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life. Everyone, welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was our wonderful brother Marvin Gaye, and I think many of us are asking ourselves every day what's going on, and I think the best way that we can answer is we're getting awakened, we're getting enlightened, and we are being given the mantle to choose. We either take the high road or the low road. I enjoyed my conversation last night, by the way, and thanks to everyone who showed up at the Meditation Museum on the Karmic Law of Money. And I had no intention to actually take it on a national level of conversation where it got to a point of actually checking the energy that's in the soul and to what extent is the soul using the right kind of awareness in its energy to create abundance or to create the things that it feels it rightfully deserves. So there was a point that came up that if I'm constantly wired, that means on a regular basis, on a day-to-day basis, I'm a bestower. I'm here to be generous. I'm here to share. I'm here to give. And I'm not waiting for the return instantly. It's in my giving that I'm feeling the return. Don't you think the universe owes my soul something? It will owe the soul something. It's the natural law of physics. What goes around comes around. What goes up has to come down. So if I as a soul, if I'm a bestower and a giver, it's got to come back to me. So I have to give a big kudos and a huge recommendation to Lonnie Bunch at the National Museum of African American History. We had the fortune of having a private tour and viewing of their latest exhibit that opened on Friday, June 8th, Watching Oprah is what it's called. So it's hashtag Watching Oprah. And matter of fact, Oprah Winfrey came out and it was very emotional for her to actually see the exhibit and go through the 25 plus years of her life. But I'll tell you what I walked away with. I walked away with the power of generosity and the power of when a person who commits to being genuine, honest, to live a life of integrity, to listen to their gut feeling, even if sometimes they're not certain, but to be consistent and disciplined, that success can't help but find you. And there is a section in the exhibit, everyone, where it was when Oprah was talking about her first job in Baltimore, that news station. It wasn't working out. She wasn't too black. She wasn't too white. It was all of that. And she had told her father that she got this job. It's paying, like, I think it was $25,000. And her father was like, oh, wow, that's a big deal. You got to keep this job forever. Her best friend, Gail, was like, oh, gone, girl, you've made it. And inside of her, she was going, I don't think that's just going to be it for me. But that was her quiet voice. But anyway, what touched me in that part of the exhibit was her first check. Her first check to the AME Baptist Church that she gave as her tithing, which was about $18. In other words, she didn't forget the art of giving and the art of bestowing. And I think that's the climate that we're in now. The climate is, become a steward of generosity. Become someone who is willing to live fully. As much as you're trying to gain your story and your place in history, which will come. It's preordained. That's what I feel. But there's something in our hearts that needs to open up and to become a bestower, a giver, a gift to humanity. And today we have a really special gift on air. I've been watching Rolanda Watts, which is our next speaker up, on just some of her views and shows and thoughts and tweets and Facebook. And from my observation, she's living and she's enjoying, but there's a sense in which there's also so much more. And so I'm happy to welcome our next guest, Rolanda Watts. Rolanda is an Emmy and Cable Ace Award-nominated journalist, television, radio, talk show host, executive producer, actor, voice artist, humanitarian, comedian, and author of her first novel, Destiny Lingers, which was endorsed by the late Dr. Maya Angelou. Rolanda is a contributing correspondent for Dr. Drew on HLN. She can also be heard as Professor Wiseman on Curious George, as the announcer also for Divorce Court, and as the warrior priestess in the latest League of Legends video game. In sitcoms, Rolanda has a recurring role on the Bounce TV series In the Cut. She's currently working on the sequel to her contemporary romance series. Isn't that cool? And we're very honored to welcome Rolanda Watts on the air. Hi, Roland. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank Rolanda. You so much. It's so nice to be here. So nice. Thank you.
We have a mutual friend, Max Tucci,
yes,
who I keep in touch with a lot, and he's such a sweetheart, isn't he?
I have adopted him as my nephew. I adore him. He's such a positive and instrumental force. You know, he's there are times where I think I say, Max, I think you're more of my uncle from the mouths of babes than my nephew.
He does come up with some wise words ever so often, and it does make us think, and that's what we need more of. Rolanda, when you come to Washington, D.C. next, you've got to go see the Watching Oprah exhibit. It's going to be not only moving but inspiring, and especially as African American women who, to me, are being, you know, they're self-made and they're not forgetting their tribe and they're not forgetting humanity. And I know that you're in that same sense of, you know, what can I give back? What can I share? How does my life actually contribute to the betterment of humanity? So what I'd love to do is to have our audience, you know, get an idea of you, your journey. You know, how is it that you got into media, the television and radio? What was it that was your inspiration?
You know, I think of that, to be honest with you, I think when President Kennedy was shot and Martin Luther King was shot, I watched my parents cry. I was a little bitty girl, but I watched my parents cry over this thing called a television. And I knew, even at that age, I think it impressed me the power of a message through that box and how you could affect change in people's lives. I think, I don't know how, I had a very deep voice as a kid, and I used to take the TV guide and read like I was Walter Cronkite. You know, but it was crazy as I look back on it. You know, and I would tell stories a lot, and they would get so long and detailed that my father would give me a tape recorder and go in the room and tell the story in your room to the tape recorder and make up the voices and everything and then come back and play it for me. And now I look at everything I do today that goes back to those things. You know, I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I went to Spelman College and majored in theater arts and English, really had an intention of being an actor at that time. And when I got out a year early and decided to go to New York, which had always been my dream, you know, I was going to be a Broadway star, and I was trying to think, how can I get to New York and make my parents leave me alone, so I guess I better be in school. So, and got accepted into Columbia's Graduate School of Journalism. And had no idea I was in such a great school because I was there to go audition. And sure enough, I fell in love with journalism because back in, 1980, there weren't a lot of roles for people who looked like me. Spike Lee was in college with me. So, Bill Cosby show hadn't come out. So there weren't a lot of opportunities. But thank God I had a backup plan, which turned out to be a major plan, and that was journalism. And I was an investigative news reporter for many years and an anchor woman for many years in New York for WNBC, WABC Eyewitness News. I also worked for New Jersey Network, Inside Edition. I was a senior correspondent, weekend anchor, and producer. And just loved chasing stories, and my stories really did help make a difference. We got laws changed. We got children out of gangs. We saved people. You know, and after Inside Edition, of course, I did the Rolanda show, my talk show. And I hope that everything that I've done in terms of news reporting, journalism, talk shows, even acting, has a message. My podcast, anything that I do, my novel, which deals with race and class, I hope that all of my art is to better humanity, to better our understanding of each other, and to be able to discuss our differences without killing each other, you know?
Right, right. Now, how do you feel with the press being under such an attack and the role of black colleges and universities now, I think, have an opportunity to make even a louder sound because many of the colleges are struggling today. So can you share why do you think it's really important, or is it important for families to really begin to send their children more to African-American colleges? And what do you think is the importance? What's the importance of kids going into college today at this particular time in which they're witnessing in the media how media is really being used as a weapon? And it is being used as a weapon for emotional, spiritual, and mental destruction.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like saying the refrigerator made me fat.
Yeah.
You know, you can't blame everything
on the
choice.
Media.
Come on.
Right.
It's a choice.
Go ahead.
It's how you absorb this medium. This medium can be very, very good. I mean, I look at people say social media, their kids are on the computer too much. Yeah, but what about little Timmy who loves dinosaurs? He can never get enough information. There's so much more information he could get about dinosaurs than any teacher could teach him in an internet situation. So there's good and there's bad. Yes, the media has its issues. Trust me, I know. I fought in the media a lot of times to make sure it stays on the right track. I think a lot of us old journalists are very dissuaded by what we see today. What we did doesn't exist, it seems, sometimes. But in terms of the black colleges, I believe that when there's so many choices that students have today and they choose a black college, I think that's phenomenal. And the reason is, I believe, having gone to Spelman College, is that, you know, your life is always going to be about being in so-called the white man's world. It's always going to be about that. You're always going to learn about Paul Revere and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. You're always going to do that. But what if you went to a situation where there were people who were just like you, who came from the same types of backgrounds, heard the same kind of things over the dinner table, who had the same kind of struggles, just for a four-year period, and you made friends that you will have for life, and that you will sit in a classroom and learn that your little patch of this quilt called America may be of a different texture and a different hue, but it does indeed fit in this big patchwork quilt we call America the Miracle. And your responsibility is to your ancestors. I mean, when I was, I didn't even know half the history that I know now had I not gone to Spelman, that my people invented the refrigerated car, that we laid out the nation, the streets in the nation's capital. And there's a sense of pride and contribution. Did the first open heart surgery or transplant, one of them. I'm foggy there. But we're very involved in highly scientific arenas and architectural arenas and engineering arenas and educational arenas and literature and song and all of the beautiful things that we have. Nobody's going to teach you that like a black college. And I say that in the 4 years of your life, take the time to know your ancestors and therefore your responsibility on this earth. And I think that had a tremendous effect on me, and I see it in my friends who also are HBCU folks.
So tell me, what were your feelings when you actually sat in a movie theater and watched Black Panther for the first time?
It was fascinating to see that many black folks hired in Hollywood.
Yeah, I know, I felt the same.
Girl,
I was like, wow.
I said, Lord have mercy, I hadn't seen this since Shaft.
I couldn't believe, and
beautiful, and really black people. I mean, you know, black people. And, you know, that is fascinating to see in the multitudes on a big screen in a theater in America. You know, and for me, being in Hollywood and a producer of movies and an actor in movies and a lover of movies, it was a remarkable journey. I've been here 20 years, and when I came here in 1998, the headlines were black people over 30 and women are not getting hired in Hollywood. And I said, well, we're going to change that. I'm going to forget that. I'm going to go to Hollywood at 38 and let's see what happens.
Right.
And so I've been here 20 years working. But I have also watched a tremendous arc happen. When I first got here, they said, I was in a room pitching stories about black history or black. Well, you know, blacks don't sell overseas. This is what I was told in the room.
Wow.
Blacks don't sell overseas. There'll never be blockbuster hits. Stars aren't big enough. I mean, constantly shot down. We don't do period pieces. Whatever they could say, we're not letting the black folks on the screen. That's what it translated to. And there was a lot of discouragement. But just like what we were talking about earlier, you know, crap makes gardens grow.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go through enough of this, and, you know, and maybe it was, remember Black Black Lives Matter, Hollywood So White, or what, you remember that movement? Together, the hashtag was a recognition that Hollywood So White, it was just like the Black Lives Matter. But it was people who had a common interest, and that was, why are we not getting hired? We have beautiful art. We are beautiful artists. Why are we not included in the American landscape of artistry? What is that about? Why are our stories not heard? And so that movement was a conglomeration of people with the same thought and attitude. It was kind of like an HBCU of Hollywood, if you will.
And they were supported by each other, and they kept clannish. And it's interesting to see what's happening over here in Washington at 1600 Pennsylvania and on the Capitol. Mm. That you've got this energy in a position of power that can do so much good, and in a weird way, it actually is doing a lot of good.
Yes, it is.
Because people are waking up. Look at Black Panther, an African-American-made movie showing the best of colors of skins on a screen, and mm-hmm. showing, do you see how beautiful this is? It was never portrayed in a way that you could be kings. You know, I'm from Jamaica, and mm-hmm. I remembered when Bob Marley came from Ethiopia for the very first time. It was in the late 70s or early 80s. And he was so struck, Rolanda, that he came back, and I remembered him telling all the Jamaicans, did you know, man, we were kings? Did you know we come from kings? And people were like, what is he talking about? He was saying, I am telling you, we are from kings. And that's when that whole Rastafarian movement began. And that's when this whole thing is like, are we missing the narrative and the story? And
yeah.
So I think that when we have platforms now, we've got Kathy Hughes with Radio One. We've got Oprah.
Right.
We've got you. We've got Kerry. We've got Ava DuVernay. We've got so many now.
Well, that's what the movement did. It made us look
right.
at ourselves as kings and queens and say, we can have our own land. We
there
can do our own ownership. We can do our own story. There, we will make our own space. And that is the beauty of the Shonda Rhimes and the Ava DuVernays.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The Black Panther, it's just an amazing movement. And I'm going to tell you, I live in Hollywood. And for many years, I was the only black face I saw around here.
Mm.
And now I see black folks everywhere in Hollywood, which is unbelievable. But it says there's employment here. These are producers. These are writers. These are set designers. These are costume people. These are writers. How many years have I gone into the writer's room at these sitcoms and dramas that I've done on TV? And there are no black people. But that has changed so much. I mean, I just think, because stories belong to us all. At the end of the day, that's all we have are our stories. You know, as a storyteller, I think the impact is that it's more beautiful when we have more different songs and harmonies in those different stories and levels.
Exactly, because I wanted to add to that as we rise above even the color of our skin, gender, sexual orientation, I think what we're actually investing in is the characteristics and the intelligence of a soul, the values and the virtue of a soul. It won't even matter anymore, and I feel that's where we're actually moving towards, is I don't care the color of your skin, I don't care what gender you're in, I don't care what your sexual choices are, what's the content of your character?
Yes.
What are your,
yes.
Yeah, what are your values? Do you stand for truth and honesty? That's who I want to invest in. Now, here's my question to you. Are you ever concerned about the kind of publicity that the media is imparting from specific areas where there is a sense of pushing out a fear mode towards specific groups of people? Because when you first met Maya Angelou and you became her friend, it taught you how to be fearless. Now, a lot of our young brothers and sisters, whether they're immigrants, African Americans, transgender, what have you, they're seeing on the news and in the media, rules and laws are saying you don't have any power, shut up and sit in the corner. Does that ever concern you, one? Secondly, is there an idea that you have in your heart that you think would be a solution to empowering individuals that feel powerless?
Well, Dr. Maya Angelou raised me to, if you see something, say something. Stand up, say something. She was not and never a proponent of sitting back watching something bad happen. She was always stand up, do something, say something, get involved. And that, you know, I've talked with her a lot about Trayvon Martin, and that was back when that was happening, and there were so many horrible things. And, you know, she was such an activist and civil rights, you know, activist, and Martin Luther King was her best friend and all. And I just said, how do you, an elder, how do you look at this? And she said, you just have to stand up. You have to speak out. And I think be fearless, be fair, and fight. Fight for what's right. Being quiet isn't helping anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also how we, you know, she would wield that sword and chop your head off and never raise her voice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had a power of presence. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's a blessed assuredness of who you are and whose you are that makes
yeah.
you walk on this earth. I think she was a shining example of somebody who was deeply entrenched and involved in the battles. You know, she didn't sit
mm-hmm.
on the sidelines. You know, no battle is ever won by the sidelines, I think she would say.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so I think it's getting involved. It's being a peacemaker. It's sometimes showing up and doing you without having to tell people what else to do. But I think that, yes, the news sells on fear. Fear is a definite factor on news. Fear, fear, fear. Your children might get abducted. Your car might crash. A police might beat you and kill you. Yeah, it's all – you just got to tune that out because I think in life that's really not the reality of life.
No,
and
no,
I
because
think
you
that,
don't see it. I mean, when you're walking down the streets, you just don't see what you view when you're at home watching Fox or CNN. And it just doesn't feel right. The other day I was out with some staff members and I went, everyone looks so happy. Are they not watching the news? And they just looked at me and started laughing because, you know, you find yourself sitting in front of that tube and you're like, oh, my God, it looks like hell. Then you get out of that and you're realizing, no, that is not hell. You know, it's whatever I make. But I want to talk about now your book,
my book.
Destiny Lingers, which is a contemporary romance novel, You Little Angel, You. Tell us about it, and what was going on with you that you ended up writing a romance novel?
Can you believe it? And I love that Amazon is calling it a romance suspense novel, which is really cool. It's about an investigative news reporter in New York City who has chased down all the big stories but not paying attention to her own life, until she finds this long strand of red hair stretched across her husband's bed pillow. And the only person she knows with red hair is her best friend. So you know where that red hair is going to unravel this story of deceit that's going to keep you on the edge of your seat. That and a hostage situation. She's so verklempt, she's got to go home down to North Carolina to this little beach community where she grew up. And she's trying to get her head together. She meets this handsome police chief. There's this uncanny familiarity. And then come to find out that's a little boy that she was in love with but couldn't be with because of segregation. So time moves on, but destiny lingers, and that's the name of the novel, Destiny Lingers. Dr. Maya Angelou endorsed it, and when she did that, she said, don't you die with this story still in you. And I knew then that it's an interracial love story, and it's ironic because the characters look like Megan and Harry on my cover, Chase and Destiny. They look very much alike. But in America, having an interracial love story, in my day growing up, and I'm 58, so I remember drinking out of the colored water fountain, and I remember the segregated South. I'm one of the last generations that actually experienced that. I wanted to capture what that was like. You know, today kids can date and marry anybody they want, black, white, LGBTQ, Muslim, anything. But I wanted to capture that time when you could die, you could be disowned by your family. It was unheard of that you could love, especially where I came from at that time. And then 20 years, 30 years go by. Time moves on, laws change, some attitudes don't, but many attitudes do. And now 64% of the kids under 26 are interracially dating. I think about, I could have been married by now if I had more options. But I wanted to dig into the difficulties of love and end it with love endures all, and that even hatred in time. And I wanted to bring in, I have a hurricane because I survived a hurricane. I'll get back to that story. But I wanted to bring in the beauty and the bane of human nature, the beauty and the bane of Mother Nature, throw it all together and see what happens. And it's been a great exploration of race and class because Destiny is a black girl who comes from a wealthy family. Chase is a poor white boy who came from a trailer park family, very racist family. And somehow love found them at the beach, and the struggle that they went through and the discovery that they found, never letting love go. I have on the cover of my book, it says, the laws that tried to separate them could never keep apart their love or something like that, but something that they overcame all of the societal restrictions and love abounds. So it's a good, juicy one. I've gotten the B.B. Moore Campbell Award, the Editor's Choice Award, Rising Star Award, It's been a good journey. It really has. And I hope you'll read it. It's a great summer read. It's perfect for the beach.
It sounds like something that should be made into a movie. Is there
Absolutely.
Any discussion for that?
Yes. In fact, I am working on the screenplay. I'm working on the audio book. And
oh,
my readers,
great.
My readers really want a sequel. So
yeah.
This looks like it's going to be something else. It reads very much like a Nicholas Sparks type of book. It has a, you know, I kind of think of Dawson Creek. Maybe it could be a series. You know, it's a wonderful story that I had to get it out. And it's been a great journey. And I've always wanted to write a book. I think that was the influence of watching my Auntie Maya and wanting to be like her, you know. And
mm-hmm.
she helped me. She shepherded me. She put her arm around me and said, "You don't die with this story in you." And I pass that on to anybody who's listening who I know has a story in you. If I can do it, anybody can do it. It's a lot of discipline, but the joy that comes when it's done is something that will last a lifetime, and that book will be on a shelf, hopefully, somewhere, long after I'm gone. So it's leaving
Beautiful.
A heart print on the earth.
Beautiful. So with all that you've done 58 years later, how does Rolanda take care of her spirit?
Well, let's see. how do I take care? You know, I love my art, and I take care of my spirit by doing my stand-up comedy, by going out pitching shows. I'm a work bee. I never feel like I'm working. I always feel like I'm playing in Santa's toy shop, and I think that nourishes my spirit. Recently, I have found that I have had to get rid of people. There are people who don't match my character, my character desires. You know, just like you said, they may have the job, they may have the this, they may be the that, but if they don't have character, and honey, that's more than a role you play in Hollywood. If you don't have integrity and you don't have character and you don't know how to treat people or talk to people, I don't need you in my life. I don't need that kind of negativity. So I think putting your foot down and saying no means no and enough already, and learning how to let things and people go has been a tremendous, you know, I'm too good at goodbye, as Sam would say. But when it doesn't fit, I will acquit.
Oh, yeah, I get that. I get that. I've been hearing that a lot, Rolanda, that a lot of folks now are feeling that there are people around them that's been like their energy drainers and their dream drainers, and they're like, we're not going in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can love you, but I don't have to love you in my vortex.
That's right.
And
nothing, I can forgive you.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel that forgiveness is a gangster move.
Mm.
Because if
Elaborate.
I forgive you, I have totally cut the tie with you. I forgive you for all that you have done, all that you are going to do, and everything that I see that you are right now. I forgive you for that, because that really has nothing to do with me. All of this mishugana has nothing to do with me. I'm just going to let you go and forgive you so that you're no longer connected to me. You're not even in my soul anymore. It's like taking one of those things when you cut a big wire, a big electrical wire, and just turn the power out, gone. Thank you. But I'm not connected with that chain anymore. And that's something I'm learning through my meditation and my spiritual practices, is forgiving and letting go. And when I heard the phrase, forgiveness is a gangster move, I was like, yes, thank you. And it's a gangster move for you. You go in and take care of stuff for you, you know?
Yes, I get that. So are you going to go on tour with the book? Are you going to come to Washington, D.C., so we can host you at the museum?
Listen, let me tell you something. I'm going to work that out with you, because I did a book tour, and I went to about 15 different cities, and D.C. was the only place I have not been. Do you know I have boxes of books waiting for me in D.C.? I was supposed to go, and I got a job, and I couldn't go. Had to take that leg off. And my girlfriends are there. I have tons of friends in D.C., and they're all like, when are you coming? So let's make that happen. I would love to
Definitely.
Do that.
Definitely. Well, look, it's been a delight having you on air, and I can't wait for you to get here. Lots of good wishes. Thank you for taking the light in Hollywood and everywhere else, and just leave our listeners with one blessing for their lives, something that can just turn this whole thing around and we can feel like we're actually in utopia.
Well, I think, and I'll pass this on from my Auntie Maya, her favorite word was joy, with a little J. She would write that thing so big, you would just like, do you see the word joy? And then she'd dot that I. I say find joy in your life. what doesn't bring you joy, go around your house and look around your house. If that vase doesn't bring you joy, get rid of it. If that boyfriend isn't bringing you joy, get rid of him. If that blouse
Beautiful.
Doesn't bring you joy, you surround yourself with things that bring you joy. Don't worry. Be happy.
Beautiful. Leave us with a website for our listeners to find more information about your work.
Well, you can go to Rolanda.com. It's a little outdated because I have a web guy who's MIA. But in the meantime, you can go at Rolanda Watts on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. That's Rolonda. And I also have a podcast myself on Apple Podcasts. You can go to RolandaOnDemand.com, Rolonda, RolandaOnDemand.com. And I have to have you on my podcast.
Definitely looking forward to that. And look, many blessings your way. And thanks
Thank
for
you.
Your spirit. It's infectious.
Thank you so much. This was a joy to speak with you. And I will see you in D.C. very soon, I hope.
Promise. Take care. So we've got so many jewels from our conversation with Rolanda Watts today, everyone. And again, I took away the importance of going to Black colleges, where we get to hear stories of individuals who just come from a different background, your roots, your wealth. And in addition to that, we're reaching a point that it's even beyond the color of the skin. It's beyond the gender. It's about character. It's about integrity. It's about your values. And that's where we're being motivated to move towards. I feel it. I know it. It's the definite, like a pendulum, you know. You pull it back, and no matter who's trying to pull back progress, the inevitability is progress is going to happen. So pull what you want to pull back, stop what you want to stop, try to have people feel like they're fear-driven in life. Nope, the future is a future of progress, inclusivity, oneness, peace, dignity, integrity, and truth. Thank you for joining us on air today. Remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we really are here to love each other the same. I'd like to thank my sponsors, Vision 2020. They're having an upcoming conference in Sacramento, September 20th to 23rd. I'll be there. Louis Gossett Jr. will be there. Marianne Williamson is scheduled to be there, Michael Beckwith. We're going to have a wonderful time to see how California can take the lead in terms of progressing our nation. And also listen out for Summer of Peace. I'll be hosting Summer of Peace August 7th to 9th. Martha Beck, Carolyn Mace, Daryl Davis, Kalita Brohi, Chief Sylvia Moore, and so many more amazing people are going to be amplifying the light that we need in the world. So are you ready to hear a sneak preview of my new CD coming up called Your Inner Journey? Here is Cherished Moments. Hope you enjoyed. Take care, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us. Continuing the journey. When you are ready, move towards the other room. It's on your right. There's a door. This door is marked Everything You Cherish. As you open the door, what do you see? What do you feel? Sit in this experience and allow those feelings to consume your inner being. Allow those feelings to begin to nurture you. You're in your room.